Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the sniffly voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
It's going around, Matthew. It's going around.
It really is. So it seems like everyone in the UK has this bug, and now it's finally reached you.
I know.
You've got it.
And I, do you know what? I always used to pride myself on being the guy that never gets ill. And yeah, I feel defeated. I do. I feel weak. I feel bunged up. And I feel sorry for myself, most importantly. Do you know what, though? It's really annoying being ill. Really, really annoying, you know? And there's not a lot you can do to speed up the process. I mean, I've heard every little bit of advice. Have a bath. I mean, that did nothing. Take paracetamol. Again, nothing. I mean, there's nothing. There's just nothing you can do to speed up the process.
No, there's not. You've just got to ride it out. I had this. I've had it for the past week, and I'm just on the other side of it now. But yes, it was horrendous. And there isn't. You take all the lemon, all the honey, all the ginger, all the echinacea. You look at all these natural healing remedies that might make you better than ordinary paracetamol, ibuprofen, all that sort of stuff. And no, doesn't seem to work. Just rest, mate. Just rest.
Well, I tried wine. That didn't work.
Sometimes it does have a weirdly effective effect, doesn't it? Alcohol. If you just flip it on its head. Sometimes it works, yeah, like counteracts the illness.
Yeah, didn't work for me. Maybe worse. But look, lesson learned. And as you say, I'm sure that give it a day or two, I'll be fine again. But if I'm a bit grumpy on this podcast, I apologise in advance.
To flip this back to goalkeeping, actually, very quickly, when I was ill over the past 7 to 10 days, and I was watching the World Cup and I was seeing these goalkeepers perform their heroics, I did think, gosh, imagine if one of them felt like me now. Like, what would that be like on the eve of a World Cup final or a semi-final or any World Cup game, to be fair? You start to feel a bit grotty. Do you just power through, or is it nigh and impossible? So you right now, did you ever play when you did feel under the weather? Because when you have cold-like, flu-like symptoms, the last thing you want to be doing is getting out there and playing.
Do you know what? The one time, and the reason I remember this, like, there's games you play when you don't feel 100%, of course, but the one where I remember I was really, really ill was the one game that I got sent off.
Really?
Believe it or not. And it was, it had nothing to do with me getting sent off, but that's why I remember it, because I remember at half time and I went in and I was freezing cold, like hot cold, hot cold. And they put this, I can only describe it as like a silver jacket, where it was like one of these jackets that kind of makes you warmer. And I remember just wearing it the whole of half time because I was shivering. Went out of the second half, sold short on a pass back, took the guy down and ended up getting a red card. And honestly, I was so happy to be sent off so I could get inside and have a shower and just feel warm again. But that was probably the worst. And I just remember it was tough because it's more mentally than physically, because you know that you feel down, you know you're not sharp, you know, it's the thinking as well. Like, that's the bit that's getting me now, is that the clarity of thought just isn't there, which of course for a goalkeeper is arguably the most important thing. You know, no doubt we're going to be talking about some of those key moments in the final, and actually a lot of that, as much as we can talk about the technique, the athleticism, but a lot of it's a decision making, it's a clarity of thought in that moment to know what you're going to execute. And that was the biggest thing for me on that day, was I was much more nervous knowing that I was quite cloudy.
We did actually see it, didn't we? Just thinking, one game, that was the Bono game, which we've already discussed, where he felt dodgy in the warm-up, took the national anthem and then decided, no, I haven't got that clarity of thought. But funnily enough, had the clarity of thought to understand that he didn't have the clarity of thought. There you go.
There you go. There you go. What a thoughtful way to start the show.
Right, we're going to do this quickly. We are just going to focus primarily on the World Cup final, aren't we? So shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
Okay, so you were filled in for last time out. Asmir Begovic brilliantly stepped in, as he always does, and covered off the action that you had missed. Since then, there have been two semi-finals and a third-place playoff, but we are going to focus on the World Cup final, which I'm sure for you, as it was for me, born in 1982. So the first World Cup final I can remember was Argentina and West Germany at Italia 90. Since then, that final itself was pretty dour. And since then, there's not really been another final that's got me off my seat until this Sunday. It was epic, wasn't it? And goalkeepers yet again took centre stage.
Yeah, they really did. And it was, look, of course, after the game, naturally, the commentators gravitated towards Mbappe and Messi, and credit to them, they scored lots of penalties in the game. But I think the goalkeepers, the goalkeepers were exceptional, both of them. It was just, I don't know where to start because there's so much that we need to cover in terms of individual moments in the game. But I think I'm going to do it back to front, if that's all right. So I want to start with the penalties, because what was fascinating to me, and there's been a lot made of this actually since the game, was if you were a betting man and you were going into that penalty shoot and you were looking at Lloris, you were looking at Martinez, and you said, who do you think is going to win this game? I bet 90-95% of people would have said Martinez. And without even knowing about goalkeeping, just looking at him, looking at the body language, looking at the energy, the way that he is, the confidence he exudes. Like before that penalty, as soon as it went to penalties, straight away in my mind, I thought, and this is nothing against Lloris, because again, an exceptional tournament, steps up to the plate every single time. His record is just incredible. But I just felt it had to be Martinez.
So it's funny you say that, and I don't want to come across negative here, but I actually didn't want it to go to penalties pretty much for that reason. Now, like you said, Lloris, all the credit in the world, and we'll get onto him in a moment or two. But I just felt that as soon as it went to penalties, you thought Martinez is going to do his thing. Martinez is going to be the hero. Argentina are going to win the World Cup. It's that simple. I know it's obviously not that simple, but I wanted the game to be won in extra time, whatever it may be. A 3-2 or a 4-3 would have been a far better outcome. And thankfully, as a result of that not happening, we have some incredible saves to talk about in the game as well. But you just felt that penalties was going to be what it was. And I actually felt like it was a bit flat. Once the game had finished, it went into penalties. It was almost click your fingers. All right, Argentina have won. Of course they have. It's done. Mm.
Yeah, no, and it was. Well, like you said, it was those last. I mean, look, again, where do we start with this? It was the last few minutes of extra time. Honestly, talk about excitement levels as a viewer. And I think what also added to it, probably, I'm sure you would have been the same. The fact that we did an event with Emi Martinez only a couple of weeks before the World Cup started as well. So kind of watching it, seeing that, the conversations that we'd had on that day. And then in those last few minutes of extra time, I'm buzzing now thinking about it. Like those last few minutes of extra time, Lloris, that top hand save over the bar. That was, again, don't feel like it got quite enough credit at the time. The ball was moving so quickly and the speed at which he got up and got that. When you actually see some footage, I've seen some on Instagram of like fans that are filming it from behind the goal, and you fully appreciate just how hard that was struck and where it's going and the save he made. But the one that we're going to talk about, of course, because this for me, and I'm going to make a statement now, which you might agree with, you might not. That save from Emi Martinez was as good as Gordon Banks.
Okay. Yes, I won't disagree with you. To be fair, I have rewound. I was off my seat when it happened. Off my seat. That's not even an exaggeration. I could not believe what I'd just seen. And again, you look at saves sometimes, and we speak about it a lot on the podcast, that they're amplified because of the importance, because of the moment. But this one had them both. It had the moment, the importance, but it was also a brilliant save. And Kolo Muani absolutely leathered that. He spread himself. Emi Martinez, you talk about it all the time, right? That's the hours of training. That's being on the training ground, going through that motion over and over again and seeing it come in a game in basically the final kick, give or take a few more. Argentina, of course, had their own chance moments later. And that's what I mean. If that goes in, if that Lautaro Martinez header goes in, that is the ultimate end to the World Cup. That's euphoria for goalkeeping, isn't it?
Well, that was it. When you actually think about that moment, first and foremost, the moment. Yeah, of course, 120th minute or whatever it was in a World Cup final. So any save is amplified because of the moment. But actually, if you think about it logically, that someone's coming through and he shot from, 16 yards, 18 yards he might have been, and he's fired it as hard as he can, and it is going right in the postage stamp in the bottom corner. It's going right in the bottom. When you see it from behind, so that should go in 99.9 times out of 100. The only reason it doesn't go in, and this is where, I suppose, going back to what you said at the start of the show, clarity of thought, like the decision-making from Emi Martinez in that moment to approach, to get close enough to allow himself to spread in such a way. And even the spread, you actually look at the athleticism for him. You know, there's that picture that's going around that I've seen 100 times now on Instagram, the point at which he makes a save. Like, how he moves his body into that, that's a mixture of all the flexibility work that he's done over the years, probably all the yoga that he's done over the years, the power to get himself in that position so quickly, the reading of the game, because that's not his leg isn't there by accident. He's not just making a big shape. He knows exactly where the player's trying to put the ball, and he's very much put his foot in that position for that reason. So it was just everything. It was the execution of the decision. It was the athleticism, the power that he's shown. And again, in the last minute, given that the striker can't do any more, you know, if you're going to say to a striker, one on one, there's absolutely zero fault from the striker. As much as people might say, oh, he needs to score that. Well, no, he did everything he possibly could to score that. He struck it incredibly well, and it's going right in the bottom corner. Then Emi Martinez just read the situation and performed something physically that not many human beings on the planet can do.
So to go back to the Gordon Banks comment, let's say the Gordon Banks save, are you saying that's the greatest save of all time, the Gordon Banks save, in your opinion?
For me, yeah, that's the greatest save, because I think that, and again, even more so, the fact that it was so long ago. And I say that just purely because of the advances in football, the advances in goalkeeping. Goalkeepers now, compare them to 50 years ago, on average, are obviously that much stronger, fitter, quicker. But you actually look at the movement that Gordon Banks had to make that save, going from the front post to the back post, the way in which he had to go back on himself, and the technique he was able to. He wasn't able to claw that around the post. It had to go over the bar. You know, you haven't really seen, as much as people likened the Peter Schmeichel save against Rapid Vienna a little bit back then to that save, you haven't really ever seen a save, or I certainly haven't, that is similar to that Gordon Banks save. It was such a unique save. Again, a key moment in a game, obviously against Brazil, against Pelé. Like, everything around that save was exceptional. And this is, for me, 100% in the same category. And I can't think of many other saves in history that I would put in this category. Like, that's my honest thought.
So if we're looking for a soundbite that may or may not get picked up by major news outlets listening to this podcast right now, are you, Richard Lee, saying that that Emi Martinez save from Kolo Muani in the dying embers of the World Cup final 2022 was the greatest save of all time?
Oh, I am saying that we've got the podium, we've got 1, 2, 3, and we've got both Emi Martinez and Gordon Banks stood on the podium, both on number one spot.
Excellent.
I can't choose. I genuinely can't choose, because I think that the difficulty is, it's like, you know, it's comparing a striker to a defender. Like, because the saves were so different, it's so hard to compare them. But I just think, you know, you could give that argument. Does Emi Martinez make the Gordon Banks save? Maybe not. But then does Gordon Banks make the Emi Martinez save? Probably not. So it's, I just think that in that moment, how many goalkeepers in the world make that save in that moment? And I don't think there's many. I genuinely don't think there's many. I think that Emi Martinez, you can see how pumped he was. And even that, it's a World Cup final. Like, the mentality that he has. I put an Instagram post, and that was the bit I really focused on, is his mentality. You know, we got to know a bit more about his story doing the interview with him just before the World Cup, where it's just an unbelievable story. And it's so inspirational, I think, for so many young goalkeepers that are out there. But I think that's all played into what he is now, because you can see how hungry he still is now. And he's done so much in the game. But that winning mentality, that competitiveness, that ability to focus in such a key moment in the way that he was able to, and perform the technique. And it wasn't just that, by the way. I thought that, you know, his game was clean on the whole. There was very few mistakes in the game. Same with Hugo Lloris. Like, again, in a game of that magnitude, you know, you must be nervous. You know, you must have some doubts that creep into your mind, knowing that you've got millions/billions watching on TV, like the biggest moment of your life, to then produce the biggest save of your life. I just think, as a mentality, for me, it's second to none.
To go back to the penalties as well, he's created this persona for himself now, hasn't he? Whereby any penalty shootout that he's involved in, like you say, 95% out of 100, you are thinking, he's going to win this. He's going to win this penalty shootout for his team. And you can see how that has now radiated to the opposition players. We saw again the tactics that he employed in the Holland penalty shootout, where it was Tchouaméni's penalty, wasn't it? Where he just threw the ball away, just threw it away like a petulant child again. But it worked, because Tchouaméni, like Berghaus, the penalty was saved. It was a very good penalty, actually. Great save to his left. But this time, Tchouaméni has dragged it wide.
Yeah, well, look, it's, and again, it's, you know, we talk about psychology quite a lot on this podcast. You actually think of the psychology of it, and it's one where in that moment he'd won the psychological battle because you could see that Tchouaméni was rattled. You know, we spoke about it a few times at certain penalty takes. I know it's always easy in hindsight when a player misses. Oh, he looked like he was going to miss. You know, of course, everyone can see that after the event. But I just think with Emi Martinez, if you were going to model any goalkeeper in the world as to what to do in a penalty shootout, well, of course, there's only so much you can do in terms of technically. You can read the situation. You can make the decision as to which way you're going to dive. You could dive fully. You can give yourself the best chance for that. But obviously the biggest part, and this is the part that Emi Martinez has mastered, it's fair to say, and something that Argentinian fans will love, and I'm sure that French fans think was out of order, is the psychological side, and that he will do whatever he needs to do to try and get in your head. And he's done it now several times, and it works because, of course, you know, if you're stepping up, what do you want to see as a striker? If you're stepping up, you're about to take a penalty, you want to see someone that's quite almost timid in goal. And of course, that's going to give you a bit more confidence. If you're then looking to hit a corner, again, you're going to feel that more comfortable that if you do hit the corner, you're going to score. Whereas if you see someone like Emi Martinez, you see a madman in goal that is exuding confidence, dancing when he makes his saves, that is absolutely loving what he's doing. You don't want to see that in goal. You know, and I think that it's a nice thing for young goalkeepers to consider is what is your character in that moment. Now, not many will feel comfortable being Emi Martinez in that moment because, you know, even that making a save and going off and doing a little dance, some people feel a bit awkward doing that or doing all the histrionics on the goal line and trying to put someone off. Not everyone's going to feel comfortable in that moment being that character, but I think that's the word, character. Like, I think he almost goes into a, for me, it's a bit of an act. He'll go into a certain character being like, right, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to make this as difficult as I can for you. And I think it's fair to say that his penalty record now is up there with the world's best. And there is a reason for that. So I think it's, and again, not just young goalkeepers, even goalkeepers in the Premier League that don't necessarily save that many penalties. Goalkeepers in the Championship don't save that many penalties. It's just something nice to see and to study and actually consider maybe what they could change in order to make themselves that bigger personality in goal.
So let's dig deep into that character then that you've referenced there, because many comments have been made after the event now. Ian Wright came out and spoke on his podcast and said that Martinez had crossed a line with his, in respect of his sportsmanship, with the antics that he was making. You've heard Luis Saha, or you may not have heard Luis Saha, but he said that the whole trophy to crotch gesture when he collected the Golden Glove has overshadowed what he achieved, because people are going to be talking about that. That's what they're going to remember from Emi Martinez. What do you make of the dancing? What do you make of the trophy gesture when he collected that after the game? What's your view on all that?
I mean, he's just the ultimate alpha male, isn't he? I mean, no, I don't mind it because, look, you know, in a game where I know I tend to stick up for goalkeepers from time to time, but I think that, yeah, look, okay, is it bad sportsmanship when it comes to penalties? A big thing that we've made out on the podcast a lot is that penalties are getting easier and easier for strikers. Any player that's been watching penalties in recent years, if you then look at the likes of Messi, the likes of Ivan Toney, like, there is a technique to make penalty taking very easy. You know, Messi showed it. Just wait for the goalkeeper to move and then put it in the other corner. And it's actually not that difficult a technique to master. There's many out there now that have mastered it. So look, penalties are getting easier and easier and easier for the outfield players. Of course, goalkeepers then can't move an inch off their line and it's going to be retaken. So I do think we need to then find a way to even things up a little bit. Now, if this is a way in which it does happen, and look, he did get booked, didn't he? When he threw the ball away, he did get booked. So he knew that he had a booking to spare. So look, he got punished for it. He got his booking. But for him, is that booking worth it? Absolutely. It's the same as, I don't know, a player's through and potentially it's a dangerous attack and the midfielder then pulls him back and gets a booking. You know, we don't then say, oh, unsportsmanlike behaviour. It's almost, oh, that's a good foul. Okay, well, why is that a good foul? Yet when Emi Martinez gets a booking for throwing the ball away, that's not a good booking. For me, that's a good booking. He's put the player off. The player's missed the penalty. It's very clever. So it's just, look, it's perception. For me, I don't mind it. He knew exactly what the punishment would be. He felt it was appropriate in that moment, and he was proven right. So what can we say? It worked. And ultimately, he's playing a game to win a World Cup. What would you do to win a World Cup? Personally, I'd do whatever it took.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's any issue at all in terms of sportsmanship here. He's doing what he can to win his nation a World Cup. If that had been Jordan Pickford, our fans would be absolutely loving it. Ian Wright would have lauded him for that type of behaviour, I think. So I don't think that's so much an issue. There were also shouts about the minute silence in the dressing room after the game for Kylian Mbappe, the trophy parade. He had a baby doll, didn't he, with Mbappe's face on it. And you can look at that and go, I mean, okay, maybe it's going a bit far, but there was a slight war of words with Mbappe before that game as well, wasn't there? The fact that Mbappe had said that South American football wasn't as competitive or as advanced as the European game.
Yeah, again, it's all perception, isn't it? You know, it's when we look at two boxers and they'll be having a go at each other, we all love it. But apparently a footballer can't do that. Like, I quite like it. It adds a bit more spice. They're going to come up against each other at some point, and that's going to make it even more interesting for the viewer. So, look, for me, it's all part of the game. I'm sure that at some point Mbappe will get his revenge. No doubt he'll get his revenge, you know, and I'm quite looking forward to when they do face each other again on the back of all this. And in terms of you mentioned the trophy gesture as well. Like, from what I understand, there was something quite personal about that. I don't know exactly what it was, but look, again, does he...
I think it stemmed from the Copa America, and he actually came out himself afterwards and said it was because the French fans booed him and pride didn't sit well with him, so he just said that he did it instinctively because of that.
Right, okay. You know, again, it's... I think, you know, if you mentioned that someone said that overshadowed... Of course, it doesn't overshadow anything. You know, he's done something impulsive in a moment for his own reasons. I think most people have sort of seen it as a sort of funny gesture. It's all perception. Obviously, didn't really offend me or mean anything to me. So I just felt that was someone who's just had the best moment of his life, who's just feeling full of confidence and maybe wanted to make a bit of a point in that moment. So I'm sure that most people are on a similar wavelength with that.
We did have a quick question, which I'll read out to you very quickly here on WhatsApp. This was from a gent named Buster, who wanted to get your thoughts on Paul Robinson's thoughts on Emi Martinez. It was during the World Cup, actually. I think it was the end of November that Paul Robinson said, Martinez isn't top class, he's not top level. Because Arsenal had had so many poor goalkeepers over the years, he spent so much time as number two. Robinson suggested that maybe he wasn't as good as people are making out him to be. And it's a difficult one, this, really, because I don't think we have to always defend goalkeepers, right? So here Paul Robinson has an opinion, and I think that's fine. I think we have to remain balanced in the sense that as soon as someone comes out and says something against goalkeepers, even if they are a goalkeeper, we can't then slam that. But I do think that he's potentially got this one slightly off.
Yeah, like you say, it's a game of opinions. You know, obviously the industry that I'm in now, it's fascinating to me that a certain goalkeeper can be the first choice for a particular club, and then you can talk to another club at a similar level and they haven't got them in the top 10. You know, not having them at all, even though you feel like, well, you play a similar style of football, surely they would fit. But again, opinions are what opinions are, and we all back our judgment. You know, naturally, we've all got a certain type of goalkeeper that we warm to, certain types of goalkeepers we don't necessarily warm to. So there's no issue with that. I think with this, and again, I haven't actually seen the interview, so it might just have been a bit of a throwaway comment, whether it was a discussion. Because I think the thing with Emi Martinez that's interesting, and look, we were quite lucky again, and I've mentioned it a few times, but doing the interview that we did with him, you start to learn a bit more about the backstory. And the backstory is so important for a lot of these goalkeepers, because look, to say something as simple as, well, he didn't quite break through at Arsenal until he was such and such, so, you know, he can't have been that good. Well, like we found out, there was a lot more to it than that. And how many goalkeepers actually do break through at a top four, top six club from the two to become the one? You know, it's very rare. They do need to go on the loan journey, and very few actually ever do get to become the number one at a top six club, because of course they just go and buy whoever they buy, which eventually was the reason that Emi Martinez did move on, because he couldn't be guaranteed that number one spot. Which and again, I'm going off tangent slightly here, but young goalkeepers that come through at a club, one of the hardest things when you're a young goalkeeper come through at a club is you're still seen as a young goalkeeper. It's one of the reasons that a lot of the goalkeepers I speak to, I'll say to them, get that first move, because as soon as you get that first move and you go somewhere, someone's bought you for money and they're installing you as their number one, you're instantly being seen in a completely different light to the club that you've come through as a youngster. And I look at the Emi Martinez situation, and yeah, okay, he didn't break through for a while. He went on a few loans, some were good, some not so good. But eventually, when he did get his chance, he did great. Now, had they have paid 20, 30, 40 million and he'd have done what he did that back end of the season when they won so many games and they won the FA Cup, there wouldn't have even been a question that he was number one the following season. But I can't help but feel that because he was still maybe seen as our Emi Martinez, yeah, he stepped in and done well, but he is our two. But look, we'll put him on a good contract and we'll, you know, he'll be a better challenge now. That just wasn't enough for him. And of course, at that moment, he made a brave decision, really, to leave a team like Arsenal and to go to Aston Villa, who at the time were, well, relegation material. But doing it with the confidence, knowing that, right, I'm going to be the outright number one. I'm going to be seen in a slightly different light. And for my, you know, international potential and to play for Argentina, this will give me a better chance. And honestly, it couldn't have worked out more perfectly.
Yep, and as we said, he bagged the Golden Glove. Three clean sheets apiece with Jordan Pickford and Bono. It's not based on clean sheets, and I think there is an expert panel which Arsene Wenger headed up on this occasion. It did include Farid Mondragon, the Colombia goalkeeper, and Pascal Zubabula, the Swiss goalkeeper as well. So there were some good goalkeeping additions to that panel. But he was given the Golden Glove, which, whenever you look at the awards that are given at World Cups, always happens to be the players that are in the final, doesn't it? It's not like they're going to keep... Jordan, can you just hang on for a couple of weeks so we can wheel you out at the final and present you with a trophy? But great that he won that. You mentioned as well Messi. I do think it's worth us just applauding Lionel Messi and his penalty techniques, because he did mix it up throughout the tournament. And actually, the penalty that he scored in the semi-final against Croatia, he'd studied Dominic Livakovic with Emi Martinez and felt that because Livakovic was always waiting for the taker to take his penalty before he moved, they decided to do a much shorter and sharper run-up and blast it straight into the top corner. So again, that's where a goalkeeper and attacker are working together. But let's also talk about Hugo Lloris. We've touched on him very briefly, but he was called out by English press, of course, for being the weak link prior to the game between France and England. He bit back in the game, and then after the game, actually, when English press wanted to talk to him, he had absolutely no time for them and just walked past them in the mix zone after the game. But I felt that even though he didn't have to prove anything, it just felt like from that England game onwards, he was good before, but from that England game onwards, he was almost flawless.
Yeah, it's exceptional. And for me, it's crazy that we're having this conversation about him, World Cup winner, who's been so consistent. And I know I use this term a lot, but for me, it is just over familiarity. It's that he's been at Tottenham for so long now that, yeah, of course, when he first came and people were loving him for a year or two, and we've seen it with so many goalkeepers that stay at a club for a period of time, at some point, things just shift a little bit. You know, I spoke to a couple of people recently and I get that classic one. Oh, yeah, no, he is good. He's got a rick in him though, hasn't he? He's got a rick in him. Like, all right, which goalkeeper hasn't made a mistake? Like, come on, man. And no, again, Hugo Lloris did what Hugo Lloris does. Steps up on the big stage, looks so calm, so composed. You know, we kind of know the strengths in his game, the areas of the game that maybe aren't quite so strong. But I thought in terms of his decision-making, reading of the game in big moments, you know, the moments that he produced in big moments, I thought he was exceptional. The only thing that I'd say, and I said it on, you know, at the start in regards to the penalties, I'd love to see a little bit more, I don't know what word I'm looking for, but if it's character or something when it comes to penalties. And that's not just him. There's a lot of goalkeepers where I think certain goalkeepers, you do feel more confident that a striker's going to score. Whereas there are certain goalkeepers, Tim Krul's another good example. You know, whether you're a fan of Tim Krul or not, when it comes to penalties, you know, you look at him and he looks like he's loving the situation. Whereas, yeah, when the Argentina player stepped up, I didn't feel that. And again, that might just be personal opinion, but I just didn't feel that in that moment. But I thought other than that, yeah, look, for me, I thought he was excellent in the final. Again, key saves at key times. You know, he's been captain for them for however long he has. He is a leader on the field. And again, he's just got that lovely, calm aura about him, which you want in every goalkeeper.
Okay, well, that is the World Cup very much done and dusted. We'll be returning, won't we, for Premier League and EFL action once that kicks off again from Saturday. But you're number one at the World Cup, Richard. If you could choose 1, 2, 3 goalkeepers that have stood out for you, who would you go for?
Yeah, difficult. First and foremost, Saturday, isn't that Christmas Eve?
It's a very good point. It is, yes. Yeah. Monday, Boxing Day.
Yes. I was getting a bit confused there, not thinking, wow. So who are my standout goalkeepers? That is a good question, actually. That is a good question. We've obviously spoke a lot about Martinez. I do think he was very much deserving of the Golden Glove. Like you say, it would have been great if someone somewhere else had won it and had turned up in full kit, you know, to go up and collect it at the end of the game. I'd have loved that. But yeah, that wasn't going to be the case. And I thought he was very deserving. Look, mentioned Hugo Lloris, I thought was excellent. I know Bono's got a lot of positive press, and I think rightly so. I thought he was very good. Now, there's a couple of random ones that we need to mention. I thought the Saudi Arabian goalkeeper, who we spoke about a couple of times in the pod. Yeah, I enjoyed his performances.
I think that's just what you want, right? That's what you look for in a major international tournament. We spoke about this briefly with Azmir a couple of weeks ago, in the sense that again, I revert. You always revert back to the first World Cups that you remember. And in 90, there was Higuita, you know, with the hair, with the coming out of the box. In 94, you had Campos with the colourful kit. 98, it was Chilavert taking free kicks, for crying out loud. You want those colourful, memorable characters that perhaps we don't see as much these days, I think, because so many players are just generic now. Do you know what I mean? Everybody sort of looks the same. No one's got any outstanding characteristics. So you want those goalkeepers that just look slightly different, that perform just slightly differently. Perhaps not the best performers at the World Cup, but just people that you can remember, that you can talk about.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I think, I'm just thinking while you were talking, so I was actually just trying to rack my brains as to other goalkeepers to mention. So sorry if I didn't quite sort of take your point and elaborate on it, because I'm actually just thinking of goalkeepers. But no, Jordan Pickford needs to mention as well, because I think that, I know that there was a bit said, no doubt you and Asmir would have touched on it in the pod that you did in regards to the England-France game. I know there was a bit said, you know, for the goal that he did concede against, for the first goal that he did concede. But I thought, look, other than that, and even that I don't class as a mistake, certainly not a mistake, whether it's savable or not is a different conversation. But I thought, again, you know, we say it so often about Jordan Pickford, that when he does play for England, how often has he let England down or made mistakes in major moments? And it's very, very rare. You know, I thought on the whole, he had a really solid tournament.
Okay, Richard, we said we're just going to do the World Cup final. We are. But if you remember, every pod we've done, I think we've done about four during this World Cup, I always said I was going to try and come up with a stat that perhaps hadn't been seen elsewhere. And I've got the final one, okay?
Ooh, go on.
Are you ready to go Uber goalkeeping Geeksville?
Go on. Hit me.
So, throughout the tournament, I've been chronicling the comments made by commentators and co-commentators.
Okay.
Okay, so this is to do with every save and every goal, every save that's been made and every goal that's been scored. This isn't to do with their general play throughout the game. It's not to do with distribution. And it doesn't involve half-time and full-time comments from pundits in the studio. Okay?
Okay.
So just saves made and goals conceded.
Right.
What would you say is either the one word or the one term that's been used the most by commentators and co-commentators throughout the tournament?
Comfortable for the keeper?
Incidentally, in second place with does well is comfortable with 26 mentions.
Okay. I mean, good height, does that sort of fall in the same category? I can't imagine that would have been as many, I think. I think that'll be a little bit lower down the list.
So funnily enough, good height as a term was used, from what I could gather, just once. Ooh. Throughout the entire tournament.
Okay. Do you know what? You've got me here. Beating at his near post. It can't have been that many times he was beating at his near post, so that's going to be quite low down the list. Flaps at crosses. Again, that won't have been used that many times.
I'm pretty much looking for one word, like a descriptive word for a save.
Solid.
Solid. I mean, interesting. There wasn't one use of solid throughout the entire tournament, but that's fine.
Go on. It was, you're going to hit me with a word. Go on.
With 85 mentions, good.
Good. All right. Okay. Are you kidding me? Was that the question? Good save. Yeah, of course. Good save.
So, yeah, as it goes, right. Good was okay. The word that was used the most.
Wait a second. You've counted 85 times when the commentator said good save. What is wrong with you? Seriously, what is wrong with you?
I knew that was going to be your reaction. So we're going to take this a step further, okay? So we're going to go through each one very quickly just to establish what they used, right? So on BBC, we have Martin Keown, of course, who liked good, does well and great. He used them twice a piece. That was his favoured words. But he also gave us the only use of fine, as in fine goalkeeping, present, as in a gift, nightmare, no man's land, didn't know much about it, and something in the way of it. The only use of those throughout the tournament. Danny Murphy said does well six times. That was shared with Ali McCoist as the most in the tournament. And Danny Murphy also gave us the only use of got away with one. Said that twice. Jermaine Genus, easy and simple, were his favoured words. He used them six times. He also gave us won't be happy, won't want to see, he'll be disappointed with that, a variation of that type of term, five times, which he shared with Ali McCoist, and gave us the only use of stood up to the test and impressive. He also gave us And this really is the pinnacle, I think, of Jermaine Genus in the tournament. Emi Martinez has just made the biggest save of his life, of course, which he made in the final. The only use of that particular term. Danny Gabaldon gave us the only mention of confident. Dion Dublin gave us the only mention of lovely. He used that four times and was the only co-commentator to use the term lovely. We'll move on to commentators. So Jonathan Pierce gave us the only use of theatrical three times and effective just the once. Who else have we got? We've got Steve Bauer and Robin Cohen on BBC. So only a handful of comments for these two. But funnily enough, they both gave us what's he doing? Only five of those in total, Martin Keown, Danny Murphy and Alan McQuist, the other users of those. Bauer also gave us the only use of required and glaring error. Cowan gave us the only use of absolute gift and huge mistake. You're loving this, aren't you, mate? You're enjoying this?
Wow, this is just next level.
Guy Mowbray. So his preferred term was straight at him. Used that three times. Also gave us the only use of nicely. And he used routine twice. Danny Gabaldon and Clive Tildesley, the only other two who used routine. Guy Mowbray also gave us the only use of eyes like a hawk, which I think came in the final as well, or perhaps the semi-final. Steve Wilson, he was the man who liked good. He used that 15 times. That was the most. He also gave us the only use of fabulous, and he really got into his superlatives, Wilson. He used crucial twice. John Champion, the only other commentator to use that. Terrific once. McCoy's the only other co-commentator to use that. He also gave us magnificent. Guy Mowbray equaling him with the one mention of magnificent. And he gave us smart and excellent, which Clive Tildesley also mentioned. Lastly, Vicky Sparks also straight at him. She used that four times, which was the most throughout the tournament. And finally, just very quickly, onto ITV. Lee Dixon gave us, he made it look better than it was. That was the only use. He was also responsible for the whole photo camera save comment. He gave us that twice. And Dion Dublin was the only other co-commentator to give us that. I think he used the word camera. And redeemed, Lee Dixon used as well. So a combination of redeemed, atoned, made amends. Steve Bauer and Ali McCoist sharing the one usage of that. On to Ali McCoist. Wow. Okay. So McCoist gave us the most four, should be saving it, comfortable, what a save, big slash strong hand. He also used the term big more than anyone. Great, not bad and poor were the only use. Dear me was the only use too. So he went right in, Ali McCoist. A bit of a mixed bag for Ali, who got a lot of plaudits throughout the tournament. John Hartson enjoyed him. He gave us the only use of incredible, unbelievable and positive. He said brilliant the most. And he also shared credit once with Ali McCoist. He gave us that great line too. One of the best saves I've ever seen in my life. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, it wasn't one of the best saves.
That was Kasper Schmeichel. It was a good save. With the save against Tunisia.
Yeah. It was a very good save.
And then moving on to the commentators. Sam Matterface gave us massive once, which was the only mention alongside Jermaine Genus, and palmed into a dangerous area. That was only used three times. Matterface, Gabaldon and Ali McCoist. And then you have Clive Tildesley, who gave us the only use of exceptional. The goalkeeper did enough. Horrendous. He gave us that brilliant sentence as well. A World Cup class keeper keeps it out. That was for Gonda, if you remember, with the goal that was scored against him in the 1-0 victory for Costa Rica. And John Champion, finally, he gave us the only use of stupendous, brave, vital and at fault, and distinguishes himself. I liked that one. And then Seb Hutchinson gave us the only use of goalkeeper to the rescue, along with Guy Mowbray. And that, Richard, is that.
Wow, speechless.
What do you make of it, mate?
I wondered why I hadn't heard from you much in the last week, and now it all adds up. There was me thinking maybe you'd gone on like a 5-day bender and you were going to tell me some incredible story. But no, you were doing that. That is what you have been doing for the last week. I'm, again, speechless.
Speechless, funnily enough, wasn't used.
No,
no,
it wasn't.
In other words, it wasn't used.
Clive Tildesley didn't use that because he seemed to be the... I mean, look, yeah, okay. Yeah, brilliant. There you go. John Hartson, brilliant.
Thought we'd go out with a bang, mate. We'd go out with a bang.
Yeah, well, again, for those that are still awake at the end of this podcast, a massive thank you. I do wonder, actually, I'd love to know your thoughts on all of that. In fact, let's put it out there, because we do have Twitter again now. I know you got us banned for several months, but we do have Twitter again now. Who their favourite commentator was in terms of goalkeeping? I'll be really keen to know that, actually. Can you put like a little poll out or something?
So you're just attacking me. You're attacking me for not having a life. And then you're saying...
No, now I'm getting into it. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm getting into it. Yeah, you've mentioned a lot of names there. I would love to know if we had... You put a list of those there. Who's your favourite commentator in terms of how they are to goalkeepers, in terms of their goalkeeping analysis, etc. And put a list of those names, both the commentators and co-commentators. I'd be fascinated to know who people prefer as being the best. My gut says that Ali McCoist will be quite high, because he can be quite negative, but he is also very positive at times. But yeah, I'll be really interested to know.
Okay, wonderful. Like we said, we will be back. So next week, once everything restarts, we'll be back with so much to catch up on, because all sorts is happening. And January is nearly upon us too, isn't it, Richard? And you are going to be, yet again, a very busy man, if not already a very busy man.
It has already begun. My friend, it's already begun.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers.